Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Fulton Lewis, Jr., speaking from the studios of WOL in Washington. Whatever it is the president has been waiting for before announcing his third term intentions, the Republican National Convention apparently is not it. Because the convention's all over, the Republican ticket is all selected, and yet this afternoon, at his first news conference since that ticket was completed, the president was still completely mum about his plans. So that is one bit of background that you should have before I go into this. When we went into the president's office today, we found that he had a brand new extra-close summer haircut. Incidentally, I think the barber must have used a whole bottle of hair tonic on him because the office smelled like a perfume shop. The point is that the haircut was very noticeable. It was almost resplendent, which may seem to you to have no connection with the story at all, but it really does, as you'll see in just a moment. One of the correspondents broke the ice by observing that Mr. Wendell Willkie, the Republican nominee, has publicly expressed the desire to meet the champ next November, of course, and he asked whether the president plans to accommodate Mr. Willkie on that. Mr. Roosevelt merely wore a blank expression in reply. He said he had not read Mr. Willkie's statement, so he doesn't know anything about it. Then someone asked whether it's reasonable to expect that sometime between now and the opening day of the Democratic Convention 2 weeks from yesterday, he will make some sort of a statement clarifying the question of whether he is or is not available as the Democratic nominee. The president replied that he's been so busy and has been working so hard that he really hasn't had time to think of such matters. And here's where we come to the barbershop angle. One of the correspondents in the front row then said, "Mr. President, I don't like to press the matter, but the famous heavyweight champion John L. Sullivan said once when he had been challenged, 'I can beat that guy with a shave and a haircut.' And then the reporter added, 'I notice that you have a brand new haircut. Could there be anything symbolic about it?' It was quite a round of laughter at that, but the president only smiled. When the noise had quieted down, he said very amiably, 'Do you mean to insinuate that I do not have a shave?' And that is all we could get out of him. However, from a very reliable source outside of that news conference, in fact, from several reliable sources which corroborated each other, I did pick up one little ray of light for you on that topic. These gentlemen told me that the president had told them that he will make a definite statement as to whether or not he will accept the nomination before the actual balloting begins at the Chicago convention. The president feels that that's only fair to the other candidates for the nomination. He feels, according to these gentlemen, my informants, that his true position should be made clear before the voting gets underway so that the convention delegates will not be in a position of operating blindly, operating in the dark, so to speak. Of course, it goes without saying that if the president is willing to accept the nomination, he is it. That's all there is to it. Now, in the meantime, you probably have heard or read the dispatches from New York today in which Mr. Wendell Willkie indicated that he is considering the idea of having his campaign run not by one man, but by a three-man board. That's mildly interesting because it's the first time that anything of that kind has ever been done so far as we have any record, but the reason behind it is much more interesting. Naturally, the regular machinery of the Republican Party is the first line of offense in this or any other campaign. And that part of the work falls under the chairman of the Republican National Committee, whoever he may be. There's a meeting in New York tomorrow to decide that point, and it's quite possible that the present chairman, Mr. John D.M. Hamilton, may be continued in the job. Mr. Willkie said that if he were nominated, he would hold Mr. Hamilton on. Mr. Hamilton told me that he would be glad to continue if Mr. Willkie wants him. Not that I'm playing Cupid in this matter, but that does seem to indicate that Mr. Hamilton will remain. But in addition, and here is the main point, there is a tremendous surge, apparently, of volunteer help on the part of ordinary private citizens, people who want to organize local Willkie for President clubs to operate in their local communities. That's the sort of thing that the average presidential candidate prays for every night and begs for all day long. Usually, the problem is how to get it, how to stir up interest sufficiently among the general public to get some action. In this case, it's quite the opposite. There's such a tide of interest, such a tide of volunteer action that it's becoming a major problem to the Willkie campaign managers. Naturally, it's something that Mr. Wilkie wants to utilize to the greatest possible advantage in the campaign, but it's something also that cannot function very well under the regular Republican machinery. So that requires a separate management under a separate leader all of its own, and he would be the second man on that board of three. Then still further, there is the need to coordinate the presidential campaign with the campaigns of the congressmen and senators, Republicans, running for election in the various states, and to coordinate these other two angles with that. And according to the present plan, that would complete the makeup of the three-man board. The chairman of the Republican National Committee would be one, a personal representative of Mr. Wilkie's to handle these informal local organizations would be the second, and finally a third man to coordinate with those two with each other, those first two with each other, and to coordinate them also with all other activities of the campaign, such as the congressional elections. Now, you've heard a lot about border incidents in Romania and elsewhere in the last week or 10 days. It develops now that we've had some border incidents all of our own in the last 24 hours. Not fighting, but general confusion and turmoil along the Mexican border and along the Canadian border. It has to do with some new passport regulations on the part of the United States, which went into effect yesterday by proclamation of the president. Always in the past, you know, if you as an American citizen wanted to visit Canada, you were not required to get a passport. All you had to do was register at the border and pass the Canadian customs officials on and go your merry way. And the same thing was true of Canadians coming into the United States for a visit. But several months ago, the Dyes Committee found that a large number of aliens were drifting across the border, the Mexican border, and coming into the United States permanently, not as visitors at all. They came in as visitors, but they remained. Then along came the scare about fifth column activities, and so President Roosevelt decided to tighten up the rules, and he issued this new set of regulations, which went into effect yesterday. These new regulations do require passports on the part of any Canadians or Mexicans crossing the border into the United States, regardless of what the purpose of their visit may be. Anyone who crosses the Canadian or Mexican border coming into this country must show a passport beginning yesterday morning at midnight. That in itself caused considerable confusion yesterday, as you can well imagine, but there was also considerable confusion on the reverse side of that picture. That is to say, on the part of American citizens here in the United States who wanted to cross the border into Canada or Mexico for a visit. And that is people who've gotten the idea, a great many of them somehow, that this is a rule that works both ways. That is what caused the confusion. The State Department here has been swamped with demands by Americans for passports, people who want to go into Canada or Mexico, and it's quite unnecessary, because the rule does not work both ways. The Canadian regulations about Americans entering Canada are absolutely unchanged. The same thing is true in Mexico of the Mexican regulations about Americans going in there. American citizens can still enter Canada or Mexico without any passport, and they can come back into the United States merely by establishing their identity when they reach the American customs officials at the border. If you are so plutocratic, however, as to be planning a trip to Bermuda, that's another matter. The British government has changed the regulations there, and you will need a passport from now on to go to Bermuda, but not to Canada and not to Mexico. Now, to take a quick look at Congress, the chief news there today was that the Senate Military and Naval Affairs Committees held open hearings this afternoon on the president's two latest cabinet appointments. Two very controversial appointments, the two Republican gentlemen who were read out of the Republican Party by the Philadelphia Convention, as you doubtless remember, former Secretary of State Henry L. Stimson, whom the President appointed as Secretary of War, and former Vice Presidential nominee of 1936, Colonel Frank Knox, whom he appointed as Secretary of the Navy. Colonel Knox said that his policy is that we should stand by the advice of George Washington and consider that our only interest is the safety of the United States. He said that we should, in his opinion, have a navy equal to the combined navies of all the totalitarian states of the world, a navy large enough to defend the entire Western Hemisphere. He said that under those circumstances, we do not need a large standing army. Colonel Knox further said that he thinks the entire cash-and-carry neutrality law should be repealed by Congress forthwith. So so that Americans can travel anywhere in the world they wish. Mr. Simpson told the Military Affairs Committee that he believes the controlling factor in whether we sell or do not sell war materials to Great Britain is whether those war materials will be of more use to us here or over there. He said he is not a warmonger, as some people have charged him with being, but he does believe in compulsory military training for all young men and all young women to impress on them the gravity of the world situation. Finally, he said he believes that if the British Navy is hard-pressed, he thinks we should allow British fighting ships to take haven in our own American ports here. After Mr. Simpson had finished, the Military Affairs Committee took a vote on his nomination, and they approved it by 14-3. Just in case you're interested, the three senators who voted against him were Senators Johnson of Colorado, Thomas of Idaho, and Lundeen of Minnesota. The Naval Affairs Committee did not reach a vote on Colonel Knox, the Secretary of the Navy, but they'll meet tomorrow morning, and there seems to be no doubt that Colonel Knox will be approved. Now, as for the rest of the news, the President issued a special proclamation this afternoon, which he explained to us at his news conference, setting up a licensing system for all exports out of the United States. That is, all exports in a long list of materials that are important in the manufacturing of fighting equipment. And that list includes a great many metals, optical glass, chemicals, hides, graphite, armor plate, various kinds of steel and shatterproof glass. It forbids the export of any of those materials to any foreign country except under a specific definite license from the State Department, and it gives the Secretary of State the full authority to refuse to issue licenses for the export of any materials if the President believes those materials should not be exported. Whether it gives the Secretary of State the power to grant licenses for the exportation of war materials to one side in the war and to refuse to grant a license for the exportation of the same materials to the other side seems to be just a bit vague from the wording of this proclamation today. That's a matter, that's a question that may be discussed in Congress, if there is any doubt about it, because that very probably would be a violation of international law, and it might get us into considerable trouble. If there is any doubt on that score, it unquestionably will be thrashed out in Congress. You may be perfectly sure of that. That's the top of the news as it looks from here, ladies and gentlemen. Until tomorrow evening, good night.